us to do. I don't know how anyone could have comprehended, how can I please Jehovah when I don't even know what pleases him? I haven't even learned that yet. And now, we know that the Spirit teaches all things, but you have to have good discipline to listen to set apart Spirit. And you can't, and you got to know how to check yourself if you're listening to him. Because he's never going to tell us to do anything or lead us to do anything that opposes what God said. Because then you won't be able to check it. If we're now in a dispensation, that's why dispensationalism is so terrible. And if you know, whether you know it or not, you are all dispensationalist. You believed in dispensations of time. We had the dispensation of God, then we had the dispensation of the Son, then we had the dispensation of set apart spirits. We now live in that dispensation. Now, how do we check those? If that was the case, which it's not, there's no dispensationalism. We're not in a dispensation, we're in the Bible. It's a continuous, ongoing, current book that we're reading, and we're part of it. We might be in the very last part of this book, but we're still part of this ongoing dialogue that God has given us, and we don't see not a single time that God changed. Matter of fact, he goes through great lengths to tell us that I don't change. I can't change. That's why we know he had to get it right the first time. And we know he did. So you can't check it to nothing if you believe in dispensationalism. Because that's over with. You can't go back and check that. That's hence the understanding we don't have to do that no more. So how do you check what the Spirit's saying? Doesn't he say try the spirits? To make sure it's the right spirit? How do we check it? If we don't go back and check. We have to go back and check. If we don't, we're not trained and we're not taught in those things, we won't be able to check it. How did Abraham check? Because every encounter Abraham had, I'm sure there were times that God was speaking to Abraham and he had to make sure that he was listening to Abraham. How many know that? When Hasatan was in the garden, he was speaking. He had a voice. So it's a voice speaking. Now, the names tagged to those voices, but when the voice speaks, how do you know what voice it is? Is it God telling you? Is it your own mind telling you that? Is it Hasatan saying it? Who's saying it? We check what's said to what God said. And God will never break his own word. He'll never go change it. He said it's going to remain the same. It lasts forever. And if it lasts forever, we can use it as a tool to check ourselves. It's so important. Now, how many remember when you were in school? Some of us here, it's a long time ago. Some of you are still in school. So you're in school, and you were given a test. I hated tests. Tests were never my thing. But anyway, when the teacher said, but this test is going to be an open book test. I like those. Because I can sit down and I can discipline myself to find out where this answer is by reading through the text. And then I can make sure. Now some of the answers I knew. Off the top of my head I knew them. But I needed to go back and check them. I can go back to the text and check them. When it's open book, it's wonderful because you can always check what's the answer. And so we have an open book. It's not being closed. It's not hid from us. He said, don't say that it's across the seas or it's in the heavens. The word is made nigh you. It's very nigh you. It's close to you. As a matter of fact, it's even in your heart if we want it. Now, we can't get the word to come in our heart if we don't get our heart ready for the word. So if he's preparing us to be a vessel of set apart spirit to dwell in us. We're the temple. Did he not tell Moshe to build a tabernacle according to these things you've seen? Don't change it. There's a pattern I've given you. You build it according to this pattern. So we see that God has a consistency of making sure wherever he's going to dwell, it's got to be built the way he says. And not the way man says. You can't change it. You got to do what he says. Same thing we're building our life. We don't get to choose how we build our life. It's got to be built the way he says. And so when we're building this temple to be the set apart spirit to come in and make us reside in us, we have to build it according to what he said, or he won't stay. And so this just makes a lot of sense to me. So this week's Torah portion is Torah portion number 12, and it's Vayahi. Vayahi, and it's Hebrew for, and he lived. And he lived. Genesis 47, 28 through 50, 26. And I have Torah's 1 Kings 2, 1 through 12. And so, again, in this half Torah, we notice that in the half Torahs, this was what they did when they were in Babylon. When they were in Babylon, we start to find this half Torah starts to be more prevalent as we go back in history and find out. The reason being, they weren't allowed to do the Torah. That was something that they were restricted in. So they came up with this idea to read a half Torah that has a similarity to the Torah. And in this case, in 1 Kings, it's going to speak of the death of David. David's getting close to die, and so it's talking about that. It's just a reminder. The half Torahs are reminders of what the Torah is all about. It's not a replacement. It's a reminder. And we should always, always go back and look at all of it, not just some of it. And we should make sure to read that half Torah because there's a lot of times there's strong, strong insight in the half Torah that if we're careful and good students of the word, we can develop skills to help us along the way as we speak these words and share with other people. So we have Vayahi, Hebrew for, and he lived. And so we'll begin our reading. We'll go through this, just a few more verses in 47. So I'm going to read through them first and then we'll talk about them. Verse 28. And Yaakov lived in the land of Mitzrayim 17 years. So the length of Yaakov's life was 147 years. And the time for Israel to die drew near. And he called his son Yosef and said to him, Now if I have found favor in your eyes, please put your hand under my thigh and show loving commitment and truth to me. Please do not bury me in Mitzrayim. He's concerned about being buried in Mitzrayim. But I shall lie with my fathers, and you shall take me up out of Mitzrayim and bury me in their burial place. And he said, I do as you have said. Now he made an oath there by saying that. I do what you have said. Now we know that we're going to see later on in the life of the children of Israel where they make a similar statement. When the Torah is being given on Mount Sinai and the 10 words go forth, they make a similar statement. We will do what you say. That's an oath. The same oath we make, and we don't even realize that it's an oath. What's the oath? You're sitting in your seat, preacher's preaching, and you feel conviction in your heart. You get up and you go forward. And you take it a stand. You just made an oath. You just vowed a vow. And who you vowing that vow before? Before Yehovah. And this has to mean something to us. And so we're going to see, as we look at these, how important these words are that he's speaking here. He said, I will do as you have said. And he said, swear to me. Now, he just said he would do it, but he says, swear to me. Now, when he used that term, swear to me, he's emphasizing, swear to me in the name of Yehovah. That's what this means. And he swore to him, and Israel bowed himself on the head of the bed. Now, he didn't die. He just bowed him because now something has happened. Something has brought comfort to him because now he has an agreement. That part that he was concerned about, that maybe even worried about, he's not worried about no more because he's got a word on it. And it's the same with us. When you feel that the confidence of God revealing his word to you about something, you don't want to worry about it. You're not even thinking about it. You're confident that it's going to be. That's what happens when we got saved. When you got saved, you started recognizing that, man, I used to like to do all this stuff, but I don't have a like for that. Now I have a like to do more of the things of God. You quit worrying about it, but the things that trouble you, you still worry about them. As much as you try to not worry about them, you are worrying about them. But when you get it settled inside and you know you have a word on it, it came, and just like Yaakov was wanting Joseph to swear to him to make sure these things would be, this is important to our life. So we're going to take a look at these few verses here. Probably through the night, there's some scripture I want to read concerning these verses. I will not do the topics in a portion. I'm going to skip down through there and just start here on 39. We have now come to the last Torah portion from the book of Bereshit, which is called Vayahi, which means, and he lived. And as we look at the closing years of the life of Yaakov, we're given great insight unto what would lie ahead for his sons. And this portion starts off by telling us that Yaakov lived 17 years in the land of Mitzrayim after having come to Mitzrayim during a severe famine at the age of 130. So for seven, think about that. That's a lot of time to live in Mitzrayim. So there were still 5 years left when Yaakov arrived, and he lived 17 years in the land of Mitzrayim. So what we see happen here is that, first of all, I want you to think about how this verse starts. And Yaakov lived in the land of Mitzrayim 17 years. So it's letting us know that he wasn't just brought there and his time expired, and we kind of lose sight of what is happening. But he got a chance to witness with his own eyes and to see Joseph operate as being governor of the land of Mitzrayim. He got to actually see that. Because you notice that this is 17 years in, the famine's over. Who's still in charge? Joseph. He didn't take that away from him. He's still in charge. And Yaakov got to witness that. He got to witness. So at 17, he was put in the pit. And for 17 years, he got to see him operate at that level. So he got 17 years. They were cherished years. That is, you know, he got to have his son for 17 years. And then he got taken from him. He thought he was dead for all those time. And now 17 years he got to spend with him. And so for 34 years, Yaakov was in Joseph's life. Now, let me tell you, Joseph might have been in command in Mitzrayim. I mean, Joseph might have been in command in Mitzrayim, but Yaakov was his father. And what his father would tell him, he respected that. And taught him, he respected that. And so he got 17 years of more training that was added to the first 17 years that he had. 17 years of more training about the things of God and the promises and the covenant promises. So Joseph was well trained by his own father. And we see how God's hand was involved in all this happening and how God preserved their life. He kept their life. And it's so powerful to grab hold to and understand these wonderful principles that we see. So he lived 17 years in the land. So the length of Yaakov's life was 147 years. So it's telling us about the length of his life, but the way this is kind of the subtitle verses, we still got to deal with 48, 49, and 50, and all the blessings that he gives. There's things that Yaakov's still going to do, but it's telling us that he lived that long. So we're seeing that this is, it's subtitled out to let us know that he made it to 147. And the time for Israel to die drew near. Now notice that it went from Yaakov to Israel. Now he's speaking of Israel. Because this is the name change. And we see that flip-flop all the time in the reading of this story. Because it starts out and Yaakov lived in the land of Mitzrayim. Well, who is Yaakov? Israel. And so we see, for the time of Israel to die drew near. So when he's getting ready to die, he's called Israel. And he called his son Joseph and said to him, "Now if I have found favor in your eyes," there's a lot going on right here. "Now if I have found favor," what's that word favor there? What is it in Hebrew? Hain. Hain. That's for favor. It's the word we get the word grace from. And so we see this word, he's speaking of this favor. "If I have found favor." Now this, again, this is so important because when you hear this statement, it's always the one who is inferior is speaking to the one who is in charge. You're asking this question. So it's the one, you're speaking to someone who's in charge. So Israel is the father, yet he's speaking to his son and saying to his son, "If I have found favor in your eyes." Think about that. So this usually, you hear this asked to, we see that Abraham used this statement. We see different ones use this statement of, "If I have found favor in your eyes." And so I want to emphasize how important it is that we take some time to look at what he's talking about here. "If I have found favor in your eyes, please put your hand under my thigh and show loving commitment." That's a said. Loving commitment. It's a said. But he says, "Put your hand under my thigh." And so literally what it's saying, and so if someone's sitting and you put their hand under the thigh, you would put it about right here. Mm-hmm. The reason for that, it indicates that the oath you're making or the promise you're making, remember when Abraham was going to die, he had Eleazar come, and what did he say? He said, "I want you to put your hand under my thigh and promise this." And what it is sticking your hand close to where the reproductive organ is, because you're saying, I promise that your posterity will continue based on my stand today. I'm going to do what I said I'm going to do. So he had to have some comfort here. He was concerned about this. Now, did he bring Reuben and ask Reuben to do this? Why should he ask Reuben? Why should Reuben be asked to come do this? Is he the one supposed to be doing this? Yes, because he's the firstborn. It doesn't matter, the firstborn, if he comes from a concubine or it's from the wife. The firstborn status still applies. According to the Torah, still applies. You don't change, it applies. Now, why is Yaakov asking Yosef this? Because he's letting everybody know, right here, he's letting everybody know, the firstborn status has just been transferred to Yosef. He's not getting no other boy. Now, he's got all these other sons, and none of them's going in there because he's not even asking him this. And this is some important stuff. Before you die, this is something you have to get settled because you have Abraham done it, Yitzhak done it, Yaakov done it. And now it's being done for Yaakov from somebody. It's got to carry on. You got a lot of sons. You got 12 sons. Who's it going to carry on with? It's got to carry on with somebody who's went through the test. Somebody who showed that they can stay faithful to God. And we see that Reuben didn't stay faithful because he went into his father's couch and took his father's concubine, and that disqualified him right there. He was disqualified. So Yaakov knew that he didn't have enough. He didn't have enough determination and skill to push his flesh aside for a second and realize he's the firstborn, and the whole weight of all of Israel was relying on him. He just had to do what he wanted to do, and because of that, he was skipped over. No different than Esau was skipped over when Yaakov came. No different than that, because it was all about what he could do for now, and he got skipped over, and it went to Yaakov. And so we see these statements here are very profound. They got a lot of stuff going on with these statements. "If I have found favor in your eyes, please put your hand under my thigh and show loving commitment That's a said and truth. So these are powerful statements. This word truth is emet. It's emet. And it's very powerful that we understand this. And I'm gonna cover some of these verses here in just a little bit. But I'm trying to not go as slow as, because it goes really slow and covers in detail every aspect of it. But I'm trying to point these things out to you so you see them and what he's saying here. Show loving commitment and truth to me. Please do not bury me in Mitzrayim. Now we know what all this is about. This is about being buried in Mitzrayim. This is about Yaakov finally going back to the place, because, listen, he's there for a season. They're in Mitzrayim for a season. It's not forever. Just like we're in this world for a season, it's not forever. It's a season. It's a time period. When that time period's up, it's over. Nothing can stop what's coming. Nothing can stop that. When the time period's up. And so we know that Yaakov is going to die ahead of the time of this expiration. We know that they're going to stay there for a long period of time. Yosef's going to die. The Pharaoh that was good to Yosef, he's going to die. Lots of people are going to die. And they're going to be in bondage for 430 years in Mitzrayim. But Yaakov needs somebody to promise him that because he's still got to fulfill covenant. Yaakov's got to fulfill covenant. What is the covenant? Is the covenant Mitzrayim? Is that the covenant? That's not the covenant. That's a temporary period of time that God's going to do great things if we have people who stand up and speak the truth. What did Yosef do? He spoke the truth. He wasn't trying to get on Pharaoh's good side. He was telling him just what was up. This is what's up. If you don't listen to what's happening in these two dreams, God's not going to say it again. If he gives the dream twice, you better listen. If he gives it twice, we better pay attention. That's still today. If God gives the dream twice, pay attention to it. Because he's not going to say it again. He don't have to say it again. It's already been witnessed. Out of two or three witnesses, every word is established. So the two dreams was a double witness. And he wasn't going to say it again. But Yosef understood that. How did he understand this stuff? Because he had something going on inside of him that was hungry for the things of Yehovah. He was passionate about what Yehovah said. And so he constantly rehearsed the things that Yehovah said. And it kept him from going down this terrible road that he could have went down. If you think about Yosef's life and how bad it could have gotten if he would have stepped out of bounds and started feeling sorry for himself and started doing things that he shouldn't have been doing, getting mad, getting bitter, wanting to get even, none of this would transpire right here. This would have been, now think about it, 17 years they in where? Where are they in Mitzrayim? What land? They're in the land of Goshen. In 17 years, their group of 70 is growing, exploding. They're now in the thousands. They're having children left and right. The blessings on them. They've been given the command to take all of Pharaoh's cattle and tend the farm, basically. They get paid to do this. Because they don't like that job. They don't like the job of being shepherds or watching over things. The Mitzrayites despise that type of job. They didn't want to be involved in that. But here comes God, sends a group of guys that exactly what they were being trained to be. They were being trained to be shepherds. They were being trained to look after people. They were being trained to make certain that they do things right. Because if you do it right, if you keep the herd right, what's going to happen? You're going to be blessed by it because they're going to reproduce. Now, Yaakov was skilled at this. When he was at Laban, he was skilled at it. Now, he wouldn't have got skilled if he'd only been there 1 year. See, what God was doing, he was allowing stuff to happen in Yaakov's life to get him ready, to get his boys ready, to be skilled at what they needed to do. Yaakov was the man who taught these boys how to be skilled at getting the flocks to multiply, how to get them healthy, how to pick out the best ones to make sure they're reproducing. And they've done this for years. They were skilled at it. And so what did Pharaoh say? He said, he told Joseph, he said, pick out me the best men you got and put them over the animals. He knew what was up. Now, how'd they get all these animals? We read it just previous verses. They ran out of money. Silver was gone. They couldn't buy grain. There was more silver. We had no money. We hungry. Our children are going to die. He said, well, bring me your cattle. Bring me your sheep. Bring me your animals. And we'll trade them. We'll barter. I'll give you so much for a sheep, so much for a cow. That's where they got them all from. They had more than they needed. They couldn't handle them. But God sent all of Yaakov's sons in one spot, and now they're taking care of all this stuff. And so we see the hand of God, how he moves and how he keeps things in order. Everything was for a reason. Not only did God send Joseph there ahead of them to preserve life, but he sent a team of guys that were being trained by Yaakov, and now they had someone to look up to, which was Joseph. But we'll see here in a little bit, even all this time, 17 years later, his brother still had this hesitation whether or not Joseph had forgiven him. Because once Yaakov dies, switches out, he'll take us out. He's going to kill us all. Because he's only keeping us because Dad's alive. But we don't see Joseph acting that way. How many see how good God is? He's amazing. And so we see this as we look at these verses. And he says, swear to me, and he swore to him, and Israel bowed himself on the head of the bed. And so I wanted to point just some of this stuff out to you, how important it was for us to look at some of these things. And the other thing, Joseph was 17 years old when he was sold into slavery. And so here we see that Yaakov is given another 17 years with his son, the same length of time that he had with him before he was taken for being dead. What is interesting to see is worth mentioning is that the numerical value of the Hebrew word tov in Strong's 2896 is 17. The numerical value, what is the word tov in Hebrew? Good. It's good. Functioning, that which functions. And so we see that in this word. So the word tov literally means pleasant, good, agreeable, beautiful, to be pleasing, well done. Has a numerical value of 17. And I'll give it to you. The letter tet has the value of 9 because it's the ninth letter of the alphabet. The letter vav has the value of 6 because it's the sixth letter of the alphabet. The letter bet has a value of 2 because it's the second letter of the alphabet. 9 plus 6 plus 2 equals 17. So we see that 17 years before they put him in the pit, Yaakov had, and it represents, these were good times. 17 years after, again, represents good times. These were quality times. This is 17 years that they needed together for more training, more understanding of the things of Yehovah. Because although Joseph was second in command, nobody knew Yehovah better than Yaakov. That's still his father, and he was going to have to get the blessing. He don't have the blessing yet. He's got to get the blessing from Yaakov before he dies. He's got to get the blessing. So before he dies, he's got to receive that blessing. And that blessing is not coming from nobody else but Yaakov. How many understand how important this is? And so other than if he dies somewhere else and none of this happens, we got a broken covenant. This covenant is broken. God's not true to his word. He couldn't keep him alive to even get the covenant transferred. We have no transfer of covenant yet. And we're coming to the end of Bereshit, but we're about to have this covenant transferred. It's powerful what happens. And I want to so badly go into 48. I'm restraining myself. I'll do that in the morning. So in true understanding of this word, tov, we can see that it may best be translated in most cases as functional. For when Yehovah said in Genesis 1:31 that when he saw all that he had made, that he said it was very good, he saw that his creation was functioning properly. Now, if God creates something and it doesn't function as to the thing he created it to be, then how can he call it Tov? He can't. He can't say that it's good if it's not functioning. And so what we have happening in the world today is dysfunction. And so when he looks at his creation, what does he see? Dysfunction. Now when he looked at the life of Yosef, his and Rahel, and Yaakov, and his brothers, when he looked at that, he looked at what was happening there, and he knew what was coming, and it just happened. You know, all of a sudden it went from what was functioning to dysfunction. It got to dysfunction real quick. Rahel's dead. Now we have Yosef, he's a teenager, and his brothers throw him in a pit. That's a dysfunction. Then they sell him as a slave. Dysfunction. And so we see this disconnect, that this boy that Yaakov chose way ahead of time, put the long robe on him, that was ahead of all this stuff that happened before the pit, before Reuben did what he did. He already chose him. How did he know that? It wasn't because he liked him more. It was more than that. It was because he had insight through Yehovah. He watched his kids grow up. And from a young age, he watched them. He watched their character. And he kept watching. Then all of a sudden he knew, this one right here is the one I'm going to put the long robe on. He's going to be the one. I don't know what's going to happen. So can you imagine? All the air got let out when they told him he's dead. And they brought the robe and said something killed him. A wild animal destroyed him. He's gone. It's over with. I mean, it looks like you're going good, and all of a sudden something tragic like that's happened. You go, man, what's the sense in it? You got to stand up and realize that is there anything too hard for Yehovah? And so Yaakov had to fight all of those years. He had to fight through all of that negativity that kept coming to him. It's finished. Who's going to be next? Who's now? So what did he turn to? The son of his right hand. That's who he had his eyes on. He had him on him. He said, somehow, something's got to work through him. Something's got to happen. Because I don't see it in the character of my other sons. I don't see it. And so we see that. And this is a lot to do with the next chapter. So I'm doing my best to stay in the lines here. So he sees what's functioning. So he is looking at us. Are we functioning properly? You know, we ask each other, are you good? We say, yeah. But are we functioning in the level we should be? Are we really functioning as we've been created to do? How many believe that a person who is being created by God, they're created by God for a specific purpose? Adam was created to be God's man. Eve was created to be man's wife. This is what they were created for. She wasn't created to be the wife of a horse or any other animal. She was created to be the wife of the man. And the man was to be the husband of the wife. There was no dysfunction there. But in society today, you get to pick now. You get to decide if I want to be a man or a woman. How do you understand? That's dysfunction. That's not functioning right, not according to God's creation. It's dysfunction. And the issue is nobody really wants to say it. We don't. We just want to keep it all nice and cozy. And you know, we don't want to really say anything to hurt nobody's feelings. But if we just read the Bible, let the Bible say it for us. If we can't say it, just let the Word of God say it. It'll say it clearly, it says it. You're not functioning properly. And it's the same thing with us. You can't be saying, I'm for God and participating in things that God never instituted or said we could, and say we're functioning. How's that possible? It's not possible. And we don't want to say it, but it needs to be said. When it's functioning, he calls it good. He said, let there be light. If you come out and the light started blinking, we got a light that blinks on the boat. Crank that right up and it just blinks. Supposed to be constant white light, but it blinks. And we don't know why it blinks. You get out there, you stop the motors, it quits blinking. Crank the motors up, it blinks. So it's something to do with the motors running. Somehow, but it's not a blinking bulb, it just blinks. So it's not functioning right. It was bought to be a constant white light. That's what it was bought for. But it's the dysfunction in it. So what do you do when something dysfunctions? What about your motor? You buy a motor and it's not functioning properly. What does that mean? Well, you crank it up and it starts to run hot. Every 2-3 minutes it runs hot. What do? You don't book a trip the next day. Because you can do all that. You can do all that. You can plan all you want. But when you get to use it, it's dysfunctional. It won't get you nowhere. It's going to make you look like you don't know what you're doing. And that's what we have to understand. God said, let there be light, and there was light. He called it good because it was doing what he created it to do. And then all of a sudden, because a man not listening to God's commands, he started dysfunctioning. And because he dysfunctions, you run into all sorts of trouble. So the man we're speaking, we're able to see that the first and last period of 17 years that Yaakov had with his son Yosef were functional years. And here in the last 17 years of Yaakov's life, revived as he lived out his last years in a good and functional way. So this was something needed for this clan to be responsible for what they were going to have to carry on many, many years later. Especially when God would wait a long time before Moshe came. But Moshe was kept by Mitzrite because his parents saw that he was a good child. And so they put him in a basket and sent him afloat because they were killing the babies at this time. And now, and that's what we're going to be getting on in the next section of the Torah portion. So this Mitzrite sees the baby and says, I'll tend to him. And here's Moshe's sister, just a wee bit, says, you want me to get somebody to wean this child? Yes. She goes get his mother. Brings the mother, and he's raised it under, he understood all the customs of Pharaoh. He was sharp. He was trained in military battles. He understood militaristic terms. He understood how to fight. He was trained with the best for 40 years. And then God sent him away from there for 40 years and then brought him back. And how would they know what Moshe was talking about when he said, Pharaoh, let my people go? Who is this guy? At first they said, who makes you Lord? Who put you in charge? Are you going to kill us like you killed the Mitzrite? Then that's why he fled. So he had to go get trained. Now where did he go get trained? He get trained how to be a what? He got trained in Midian by Jethro, his father-in-law, how to be a shepherd. For 40 years he was trained to be a shepherd. Then he sent back. Now he knows how to interact with people. Now he knows how to deal with people's situation. Now he knows how to speak to people, speak into their life and lift them up. He knows how to do that. He knows how to correct. He knows when it's time to use the staff or when it's time to use the hand. He knows all those things. Very important. Now, how many of you ever seen those pictures that show the shepherd with the lamb draped across the neck and he's kind of walking back? And it's a picture that's been painted by someone in artwork to resemble he goes get the one who strays. But how many of you know it's never a goat around his neck? It's always a wee little lamb. How many of you noticed that? You ever noticed that in these depictions? So we see that depiction theme comes out of Scripture. God got Moshe ready. He comes back. Now, watch Yaakov. What does it have to do with what's happening here? Yaakov has 17 years to remind his boys about the things of Yehovah and the promises of Yehovah and how important it was to stay true to the word. Did they understand about favor? He wouldn't have used this terminology if he wouldn't. Did he understand about love and commitment? I said, he wouldn't have used this terminology. Did he understand about truth? He wouldn't have used this terminology. None of this terminology would have been used if he wasn't one who understood these terms and can then share them with his children. They needed to understand this type of stuff, how important it was, because in Yaakov, at the end of his life, had the best years of his life. They were functional years, hence the term 17 for our thoughts. And so we see that the pictograph script for Tov, I'm just going to give it to you fast, you can look at it for yourself. It's 2896, it's pictured as the Tet, the Vav, and the Bet. So we have the Tet, the Vav, and the Bet. And what it depicts, from this picture we're able to learn and see that the basket is secure in the house. It's so easy. The basket is secured in the house. You don't, you know, if we're using baskets in terminology, that we put our important stuff in our basket, or we're putting the stuff that's expensive, stuff that has value in the basket, you don't get to the house and leave it outside the house and thinking you get up in the morning, it's going to be wonderful. You know, you're not going to be able to sleep at night. You're going to go up there and you're going to think, man, I wonder if somebody's taking my basket. What you do is you go back, you get your basket, and you bring it in the house. You're secure in the house, not outside the house. So you got to secure your basket in the house. And this is what we learn from this word, Tov. The basket is secured in the house. It's good. It's functional. It's the thing that God's wanting to. I want God to say, it's good. You want him to do that. Because we know that. Another way you can look at it can also be understood. We as clay vessels are made secure through the blood of Messiah that holds for us a secure covenant promise of being made complete in him and becoming the dwelling place of the Most High. That's what happens when we understand just this word, Tov, how good it is. Again, now how do we bring Tov into this whole situation? Because in Hebrew, we know that in the Hebrew lettering, there's a number assigned to every letter. There's a numeric number assigned to every letter. And so when we look at the word, we look at 17 years, why does that interest you? Remember, if you're studying the Bible and you're studying the Bible, he was 17 when they put him in the pit. He was 17 years living in Mitzrayim. That's twice. If it's mentioned twice, there's always something attached to that that you can get a deeper understanding. And so when you look at that 17 and you look at the word good, Tov, numerically, it fits 17. And so now we're looking at that word because what was happening wasn't dysfunctional. What was happening wasn't them just barely getting by and not surviving after this famine. They're doing extremely well. And the Bible's trying to tell us that. So we got to get the picture of this famine and they're scratching and pawing, see how they're going to feed their family. That's over with. We went through that. That was 7 years of famine. But because Joseph stayed in command all this time, he's in command, and they're living in the best land in Mitzrayim, the best land, and they got the most fascinating job because they were training all their life to do what they were doing. They went in and every one of them had a resume this long to do the job that they were asked to do, and that was take care of the animals. And they had a bunch of them because nobody had money. They were giving all the animals away. They was giving their land away. They had no land. Mitzrayim owned everything. At one point, the people owned nothing. They had to give their land for food. They gave their animals for food. And so, but Joseph, again, where is he sitting? He's sitting right where God put him, right where God placed him. And one thing about Joseph, he never let the amount of stuff he had get to him. We don't see that nowhere where Joseph allowed this stuff to get to him because he's the man. He never got to him. He always humbled himself before Yehovah. And how do we know that? We see this humility right here. Because Joseph's called in, not Reuben. Joseph's called in. And he's speaking to Joseph. He's saying to Joseph, he called his son Joseph and said to him, now if I have found favor, if I have found hain, that word hain is grace. It's the same word that we see, we use the word charis in the Greek, And we use the term, we say grace. And we think grace is some new thing that happens only in the New Testament. If you read the Torah and read through the Tanakh, it's literally with the grace of God showing the people. This is not a new concept. Because we didn't read what we should read, we think now it's a new concept. Okay, now you're under grace. Being under grace doesn't mean you're under something, you're something special that's never existed before. You don't even know what it means if you don't know what existed before. You have no concept of what being under grace means because you don't really understand what grace is. You get invited into something you did nothing for. Nothing else. You get invited in and you're given a spot in that. That's the grace of God, because he don't have to do it. He did it because if he wouldn't have done it, there's no hope for us. None whatsoever. We can't fix ourselves. We can't fix the mistake we made. You can't do it. Grace is God coming in and fixing it for us. Now give us an opportunity to be obedient to him and obey him. We got to obey his word. Go back and now live an obedient life to him. So important. That's why we have hang and we have loving commitment. Hesed, those things go hand in hand. If you're experiencing the grace of God, you ought to be experiencing Hesed, loving commitment. You ought to be lovingly committed to the thing that is before you. And so he's telling Joseph, he said, I hope that you have a loving commitment. Now this loving commitment was not to feed him. He'd been eating his food for 17 years. I hope you have loving commitment enough to stand firm and true, because you're going to be named as the firstborn. You're going to get the double portion. You're getting it. Joseph's seeing this for the first time in his life. And he wants them to have a loving commitment. He wants them to understand you got to make sure your character stays right. Make sure your heart stays right. You have to have a loving commitment. Loving commitment, I said, is something that you want to obey God. So when you want to, it's not hard. When you fight it, it's very difficult. It's very difficult, and you're feeling odd about your position, and you're looking at everybody else, and you're feeling odd because you don't know what they're thinking. But when you want to, it's not difficult. You just submit to what God said. And as we look at these letters, we find a great revelation in terms of the good news, the Besor, or rather, the told news. In a way, we see clay vessels are secured into the house of Elohim, is being secured by the peg. Very important. I want you to read this Isaiah account. Isaiah 22, verse 22. And I shall place the key of the house of David on his shoulders. Now this is prophetic utterance speaking of somebody. I'll place the key of the house of David on his shoulders. And he shall open and no one shuts. Who are they speaking of here? This is a prophetic word about Yeshua, the Messiah. He shall open and no one shut, and shall shut and no one opens. What does that mean? Now this is the same position Joseph had. If Joseph decided to open, no one could shut it. If Joseph went in there and said, okay, God, open all the shops up and get the grain that we're about to give grain out. They didn't start closing up on the other side of town and say, what are y'all doing? We closing up. Did Joseph say close up? No. Well, y'all better quit closing up. Now he had an entire army that was at his one word, and they would slaughter the people who were going against Joseph. Because Joseph had that authority. Now there's another one who has this authority, and that's Yeshua. And it's Isaiah is prophesying, and I shall place the key of the house of David on his shoulders, and he shall open and no one shut, and shall shut and no one open. And I shall fasten him like a peg. What's in the word tov? What's the peg? The peg is what? The vav. He said, I'll fasten him like a peg in a steadfast place. What does it mean to be fastened like a peg in a steadfast place? That means it's not going to change. It's the same. It don't change. It's what he said it's going to be. That's why we have to make sure we're studying what he said. Living what he said. Doing what he said. Because it's a peg. And the other, you know, there's a cartoon or a movie out when they got the sword in the stone. What is that? Then you pull a stone, you got to pull a sword out. You pull a sword out, and you the next guy. I don't know some. Is it sword and stone? So a bunch of big guys go there and they're pulling on. They can't move it. Can't be moved. But when the right guy comes, it's moved. It's just like this peg. It can't be moved. I don't care how big it gets. I don't care how many's against it. Thousands can stand against it. They can write articles against it. They can write laws against it. It don't move the peg. The peg stays the same. How do we know that? Because they took the peg and put the peg on the cross and put him in a tomb and rolled a stone in front of it. When they got there, they understood something, that the peg can't be, you can't capture him, you can't even kill him. You can't do anything to this peg. Why? Because he's fastened by Yehovah. I fasten him like a peg in a steadfast place, and he shall become a throne of esteem, a throne of glory to his father's house. Where was Joseph? He came to esteem in his father's house. Even though he was in the house of Pharaoh, everything that Joseph was doing was all about his father's house. It's about what was going to be done in the lives of those boys that lived 17 years with Joseph. They interacted every day. They interacted. And they shall hang on him all the weights of his father's house, the offspring and the offshoots, all vessels of small quantity, from the cups to all the jars. Everything is on Yeshua. All is on him. And he don't mind it. He didn't mind taking all of our sins. He who knew no sin became sin. He didn't mind it. But he does mind when we come up to him and say, well, the way I see it, I don't think it has to be like that. He minds that stuff. He really does. And I don't know how do we get the audacity to think that we can tell him, or what authority we have that we can tell him how it's going to be. There's no way we could do that. We know that this is a great picture of how through Yeshua's side we are fastened in a steadfast place. In Ezra 9:8, but now for a short while, favor has been shown from Yehovah Elohim to leave us a remnant to escape and to give us a peg in a set apart place, that our Elohim might enlighten our eyes and give us a little reviving in our bondage. What else is described as a peg in the scripture? It's steadfast, unchanging. His word. His word. If his word is not something that's constant, that's concrete, that's fastened, it's pegged down, and it's just all over the place, and you can just add to it any way you want, take away from whatever you want, like, then how in the world that you ever going to possibly know him? How in the world you ever going to have a relationship with him? Because there's nobody here. When's the last time you sat with God? Who's been to coffee with God in a while? In person. We don't have that. We don't have that in person with him, but we have to use the means in which we can do that. And if we don't use that means in which we can do that, we don't even know who he is. We never spoke to him. But if we understand who Yeshua is, he said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. I'm the exact representation of him. When I speak his words and not my words. And now we have set apart spirit that's empowering us to have this relationship, or get this thing moving in the right direction. Because I can tell you, your flesh don't want to pray. Your flesh don't want to study. Your flesh is lazy when it comes to studying. Don't want to study. It don't want to read the whole chapter. It don't want to read the chapter above and the chapters below. It just wants to read that one verse and move on. Because I got stuff to do. Come on. I got stuff to do. My show's coming on. The ball game's about to start. Come on. That's what the flesh wants. But your spirit, it wants to do this because it's the one empowering us to have this relationship. So it's not every time we say yes to him when he beckons us to sit down and listen for a while. And every time we don't, what happens? Trouble. We start down that dysfunctional path. It leads to nothing but trouble. This again is a wonderful promise given amidst the time of bondage due to a peg is given in his set apart place. A great picture of loving commitment and compassion Jehovah has for his called out nation, that while the house of Elohim has been neglected and broken down, he will bring the necessary means to secure his covenant people to his house that he builds by his design. He builds by his design. How many thank God for that? So I want to take some time. I'm going to skip around here just a little bit because we're not going to have time to cover all these slides. But I'm going to show you the opposite. In other words, it refers to something that functions within its intended purpose. When it says it's functioned tov, we're still dealing with the word tov. How do we get that word tov? From 17 years. 17 years old when they put him in the pit, 17 years that they lived, that Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim after he arrived. Very important. Now we got this word good or tov, and we realize this word means to function. In other words, it refers to something that functions within its intended purpose. God has an intended purpose for all of us. Sometimes it's hard for us to find that intended purpose. And sometimes it's hard for us to figure out what that intended purpose is. But as we build this relationship with him through Yeshua, all of a sudden I felt the call of God or whatever it is you feel, but all of a sudden you have an assignment given to you, and that's your intended purpose. You get outside of that in the slightest, it's dysfunctional. It's no, I changed my mind. It's the intended purpose of God. How many know the intended purpose of God is not our dreams, our wants, our desires? It's his intended purpose. Now, God had an intended purpose for Joseph. There's no way that Joseph would have picked the pit in the prison and the manipulation that he went through. He wouldn't have picked that for his life. He wasn't having those kinds of dreams. He was having dreams, but he didn't understand those dreams. Joseph's dreams was showing him the outcome. It was the end of what it would be. He never showed him in between. He had no dream about in between. But that was God's intended purpose for his life. It was God's intended purpose. Now, did he realize that? Came out of his own mouth. You made it for you, but God knew. He sent me ahead of you to preserve life. It was the intended purpose. Remember, when you fulfill the intended purpose of God, it's always about preserving life. Whether it's your life or your family's life or some people you know's life, whatever it is, it's God's intended purpose. There's nobody can tell me that what I'm doing as a pastor is not God's intended purpose. I knew that a long time ago. Now, I could have changed that. I could have come up with some fancy way to say it and change that, but that doesn't change God's intended purpose. Because I can change it, don't mean it changes God. Right. And I can make a big mistake and say, well, there it is. So what God intended for me, it don't count no more. It always counts. Right. You don't get off of it. It always counts. There's no, I changed my mind, I don't want to do that no more. God's intended purpose always counts. And so it's important that we understand that. Now, God had an intended purpose for Yeshua. When he was born, that intended purpose for a reason. Now, can we change that intended purpose? Can't be changed. And did Yeshua live up to the intended purpose of God? Absolutely, he did. Because of it, he was rewarded. And the reward was he set him at his own right hand in heavenly places. Yeshua became that Benjamin statement, the son of my right hand. And we're going to see some lessons in 48, because I'm trying, about this right hand. It's going to come up. And the importance of that right hand is going to come up. And what is done, because we're going to see it told to us in a story form that's so fascinating, it's absolutely incredible. And so the tree of knowledge in the garden, the Hebrew word ra, 7451, means bad, evil, wicked, harmful. It's the opposite of tov. It's ra. The tree of knowledge in the garden was of tov, good, and the tree of evil, ra, good and evil. That was in the midst of the garden, good and evil. And then what tree did he tell them don't fool with? Don't fool with the good and the evil. You say, well, I'm only going to get the good out of it. You can't do that. You can't do that. I know we think we can, and we got slick ways of saying it. Well, you know, I'm really not, I'm there, but I'm not participating. The fact that you're there is an anticipation. You're participating. So you can say as slick as you want, don't fool with good and evil. Why? Because the tree of life is right next to it. That's where we should be eating from. The tree of life. There's nothing about evil in that tree. It's all about life. And let me tell you, if you want to sum up a short saying about Yehovah, Yehovah is all about life. It's all about life. The Torah is all about life. Yeshua was all about life. Everything he did was all about life. Everything he taught was all about life. He's not, but when he's up against the religious spirits, he had to handle it. Because religious spirits will always say, well, that don't matter. Keep staying underneath the shade of the tree of good and evil. And that's the statements that come out of your mouth. It does matter. It matters to God. And God said, don't fool with that. What does Satan tell us? It's going to be all right. You don't have to listen to that. It'll be fine. You'll be good. You'll be all right. Just take the good out of it. So what we want to do is we want to say, well, when Yeshua died, all he done, he took the good out of all the evil, and we don't really have evil anymore. You know what Jehovah said? He said, when you go into their land, don't save their stuff. Destroy it. Get rid of it. Don't keep it because you think, well, it's pretty. I'm going to keep this right here. What happened every time they did that? What happened every time when Joshua was put in command and he started leading the people? I'm getting on tomorrow already. And they're going to fight. He tells them, don't take the stuff. Leave the stuff. They go in and take the stuff anyway. And they wind up in trouble. Yehovah said, we don't need that stuff. Because what happens when you take the stuff and think you're gaining this stuff, you made it possible. Yehovah wants to know that. Trust in him. Put your faith in him. He can do it for you. And so we see that happening time and time again. Just as we understand that Tov represents that which is functional, we can see that Ra represents that which is dysfunctional, which simply speaks of that which reveals an abnormal and unhealthy lifestyle that is not functioning as it should. We may often think something is good, yet if it is not functioning according to the plumb line of the Torah, because so everybody's got their own definition of functioning. We always run into that. But how many know there's a plumb line? How many know what a plumb line is? A plumb line is something that a construction guy uses. A highwayman uses, a bridge builders use it. They all use these plumb lines because a plumb line, if you hang it up and it stops swinging, it's going to stop. That's the point. And you take from that, you measure from that plumb line point. If you're trying to start off straight, you're going to use a plumb line. So we got something high. We're going to pull that line off that wall. We want to make sure it's straight. We're going to use a plumb line. We're going to make sure it's straight. The Torah is a plumb line. He's telling us this. It's the plumb line. It's the thing we go and check everything against. We got to check it, don't we? If we don't check it, how in the world are we going to know if it's right? Same thing when your stuff. You check your stuff. You don't check it, what happens every time you didn't check it? What happens every time you didn't check it? What happens when you don't check if you got fuel in the tank? You're calling somebody. That's what happens. When you don't check it, and most of the time we don't check it because we're wide open. And we take the gamble and we say, I don't know, I think it's good. Every time you said that, it always turns out bad. Now we have these experiences in life, God's not trying to hurt us, he's just trying to show us. He uses these real life incidents in our life to show us that we have to make sure we check it. You go along in life, you got to check it. When we was in captain school, what did the instructor tell us? Yeah, our instructor, he walked like this. He was a military guy, drove an aircraft carrier. He was a captain. He had all kind of decorations, you know. So we sitting there, we think, you know, I've been on a boat all my life. You ain't never been on this kind of boat. You know, you look at our boat and say, you call that a boat? That's no boat. This is a boat. So he's telling us, he said, listen, if I leave from the U.S. off the East Coast and I got to go to China, he said, I'm going to have a general idea of how I'm going to get there. I'll put it in the program, plot it in the GPS and plot it. They got the fanciest stuff you can have. But he said, we're not trained to just put our trust in all of this stuff. He says, when I'm on my way, I got to roll the chart out. I got to roll the chart out, and I'm going to check the machine to make sure we're in the right spot. Because on that trip, if we get off course and we wind up in enemy territory, that could cause a war. That could cause a lot of trouble and a lot of lives be lost because we didn't want to get back to the chart and check the chart. We got to get back to the chart and figure out where we are. And remember I told that story about this singing group that went sing off of the East Coast, off of Virginia, the island out there? And they got in that boat, and they're going off, and they're in a mail boat. And they go salty the captain. He was a professional. They all jumped in. They were singers. They didn't know how to drive a boat, tie a boat, didn't know nothing about a boat. They just riding in the boat. All of a sudden, they're going, and all of a sudden, they hear a stern going on, and the motors just shut down. Captain comes out and says, I don't know where we are. One of them singers looked at the other singer and said, if he don't know where we are, we sure don't know where we are. And what happened, they had them speakers, them old speakers they used to carry around them singing groups. They had these big magnets about this big around them. They backed them up to the wheelhouse, and it got too close to the compass, and the compass was just kind of squirreling on like that. If you got a compass and you want to try, get you a magnet, put it by the compass, see what happens. It'll start spinning on you, and the boat's not moving. So he looked at his compass, and he thought, man, I thought I'd been going this direction. That thing done spun a couple of times, and we done turned a couple of circles. I don't know where we are. So what he did, he went to the cabinet and pulled out a chart. He looked at the chart and figured out, by looking at the chart again, about where they were. And he said, we just got to go a few more miles that way. And they got to where they were going. But if they wouldn't have been from, and the whole part of the story where the guy was telling us, said, sometimes you got to watch, because you could be following the speaker rather than getting back to the chart. The speaker was leading them across the Atlantic Ocean. They would have never got to that island. They'd have missed the island. But they were listening to the speaker because the speaker was telling them, this is where you need to be. But what we need to do is get back to the chart, go back to the Word of God, and figure out these things because we have been drifting for a while. We have been drifting. And so this should be important to our life. And so what we look at is the Word of God. It's what it... What's good is functional, what's not good, what's evil is dysfunctional. So we simply speak of that which reveals the abnormal, unhealthy lifestyle that is not functioning as it should. We may often think something is good, yet if it is not functioning according to the plumb line of the Torah of Yehovah, then we had best be careful to consider our steps. Yaakov lived at least 17 years with the full assurance of Yosef being alive and appointed as governor over Israel. This was good news. And the time for Israel to die drew near. He called his son Joseph and said to him, now if I have found favor in your eyes, please put your hand under my thigh and show loving commitment and truth to me. Please do not bury me in Mizraim, but I shall lie with my fathers. You shall take me up out of Mizraim and bury me in this burial place. And he said, I do as you have said. And he said, swear to me. And he swore to him, and Israel bowed himself on the head of the bed. Verse 29 and 30 through 31, the time of Israel drew near to die. And here's an account we see how it is written that Israel and not Yaakov was about to die. The name Israel is Strong's 3478, which means he who prevails overcomes with El. And that happened in his wrestling when right before he met his Esau. Remember, he was so troubled by this, he had wrestled with the messenger. And what did the messenger touch? The thigh. He was guaranteeing the covenant, what he was doing. It's a guarantee. You're guaranteeing the covenant. This posterity, this family's going to go on. I know it looks terrible. It looks like it got a little messed up. This family was broken up. But now this family is secure. They're going to go on. And that's what it's resembling. And so we see that happen. It comes from two primitive root words. L, Strong's 4, 1-0, which means mighty, power, shortened form of Elohim, a mighty one. And the root verb is sarah, which is 8280, which means to persist, exert oneself, preserve, wrestle, contend, and is spelled the same as the name of Abraham's wife, Sarah, which is 8283, which means princess or noble woman, which is in the feminine, and the word sarah, which is 8269, which means prince, captain, chieftain, or ruler. The name Yaakov, Strong's 3290, means grab the heel and comes from the word Akev, which is 6119, which means heel, footprint, or hind part. The heel is the last part of the body to come out of the womb. And so this word also speaks of the hind or latter part, which Yaakov catching the heel of Esau. We see how even at birth he sought the blessing of the firstborn. And so that's how he got his name. Again, names in Hebrew is all about character. Now you can give a name to somebody and they haven't yet lived up to that character. And we have to make sure. Now his name was Yeshua, given to him, he has to live up to that character. So if Yeshua is Yah is salvation. Is he going to live up to that character? Absolutely he did. He lived up to it. Same thing we see in the life of Yaakov. He had to live up to that character. And we see that happening in his life. As we look at his life, we can also learn a great deal regarding the blessings of Yehovah that follow hard after his heel. When we walk in obedience to the instructions of Elohim, Yaakov had certainly now received the blessings, and he is Israel, the one who prevails and overcomes with El, and all his perseverance had now fully paid off in a manner of speaking, and he could now die knowing that his sure inheritance in the kingdom to come is secure. So I want to read something I want you to go to Ezekiel. This has really been on my heart all week this week. Ezekiel 22. Start with verse 23. I just want you to listen to this. And I'm going to use this as an opening for in the morning. But I want you to listen to it. I want you to think about it all night. Verse 23. The word of Yehovah came to me saying, Son of man, say to her, you are a land that is not clean or rained upon in a day of displeasure. There is a conspiracy of her prophets in her midst, like a roaring lion tearing the prey. They have devoured life. They have taken wealth and precious matters. They have made many widows in her midst. Verse 26 is the key verse. Her priests have done violence to my teachings. They have profane my set apart matters. They have not distinguished between the set apart and the profane, nor have they made known the difference between the unclean and the clean. And they have hidden their eyes from my Sabbaths, and I am profane in their midst. Let me see this. Her leaders. In her midst are like wolves tearing the prey to shed blood, to destroy lives, and to get greedy gain. And the prophets have coated them with whitewashing, seeing a false vision and dividing a lie for them, saying, thus said the Master Yehovah, when Yehovah had not spoken. This is a dangerous place to be. Terrible spot to be. And I'm just going along trying to study the Torah portion, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Yehovah said, I want you to read this. And I read it, and I read it every day since he told me. I read it every single day, sometimes 2-3 times a day, I read this passage. But I want you to see something here, how valuable and wonderful what he's saying here is exactly what's happening in the world today. So he's prophetically telling us. He's trying to get us to understand. They have, notice what they've done. The priests have done violence to my teachings. They have done violence to it. What does it mean to do violence to his teachings? You add to it or you take away from it. That's doing violence to the teachings. Why don't we let Yehovah say what he said and let it be at that? Why don't we take him at his word? He gave his word, we should take him at his word. We talk about we trust him, we should trust him at what he said. And so I just wanted to point that out to you. And I'd like you to read Psalms 105. Psalms 105. That came to me on Wednesday. Psalms 105. I just read through it again. Just read 105 and tell me how 105, it just tells us about the story we just went through and what we're going to continue to go through. Psalms 105 is just telling the story and how important it is for the story to be told. So you read Psalms 105, you'll see when you get to the part of a story we just went through, all this in through Bereshit, it tells that story of what happens. Very good reading there. And I'll talk more about this Ezekiel 22 in the morning. But I appreciate your time tonight. I thank God for you. Appreciate God's goodness. He's so good to us.